shouldn't ever have to do that, unless this is a screen dump, then you might have to do it. Not applicable. They're very gloomy in this dark. Would people prefer the lights turned up a bit? I always hate it when I'm in the audience and it's gloomy. Well, it's only better than when you started, thank you. Alright, so I'm Jeffrey Fox, and so this is meant to be a tutorial on various applications of web technology in HPCC. And the format is that I will talk this morning on some sort of overview of web technologies, followed by a discussion of applications, mainly which I spend most of the time on use of the web to do computing. In the afternoon, David Warner will take over. He will describe the healthcare applications of web technology and will also describe how to use the web for high-performance information interfaces. And then at the end, we'll answer all possible questions you might have if there are any of you left. So, right, let's. Well, while they're negotiating, how many of you consider yourself pretty expert at the web? Most, all right. So I won't. There's too much material here, so I need to know what to miss. So I'll mainly talk about applications. All right, why don't you press next if you... Well, there's a button at the top here called next. Okay. So. All right. So I would view that some of the most relevant web technologies are exemplified by Java, JavaScript, VRML, the linking of databases to the web, and collaboration. So we'll discuss that at some level. And then we'll describe some sort of overall architecture where you layer applications on top of services. And as it says here, we'll describe three applications in detail and mention another, probably manufacturing, somewhat more briefly, and I probably will skip most of the comments on education unless you want me to go through it. Your large handout has a substantial amount of material on education. Next. So, there are two garbage foils in your handout, I apologize. So people are always worried about the enormous amount of commercial activity. They're either pleased or worried about the enormous amount of commercial activity in the web, because they say, well, we can't compete. So we better keep clear of this technology. So I would say that there is some truth in that statement, in that you rather difficult to compete given the time scale and money that industry works on. It's sort of amusing to compare high performance Fortran with Java, or no, better even to compare Fortran 90 with Java. Fortran 90 probably took about 15 years to reach maturity from first inception in around 1978, so the first compilers really becoming truly available around now, whereas Java was delivered within a year or so. So the timescales we're working on are very different from some of the timescales we're used to. So I would claim that there are two areas where there are at least two areas where at least the HPCC community can contribute. The first is to look at the web for high-performance computing, and the second is in the area of education, in that we're meant to know how to do some education. The academic parts of this are meant to do that. All right, next file. All right, so this basically starts off by putting a few things in context, leading up to the observation that web technology can provide some of the missing links in high-performance computing. Namely, the problem with high-performance computing is not that the technology doesn't work, it's that it's relatively difficult to implement it with good software infrastructure. Next file. Okay. Next file. All right. So I think it's quite interesting to compare the evolution of high-performance computing, where I would claim that the things which are technologically reasonably clear are hindered by social forces, namely the fact that it's hard to port large codes and things like that, whereas in the communication area, almost the opposite is true. Namely, things are getting adopted faster than you might expect technologically because of deregulation forcing various industries to compete. So I would claim that that suggests again that it will be useful to look at the web as an adjunct to high-performance computing. Next file. So that's sort of what this file says. I must admit, if you had stocks in your local university, I would sell them. I don't think universities are going to find it very easy to compete in this world, in that it seems to me one of the areas that will have that this technology will have the greatest impact in is that it should be possible now to deliver education in a distributed fashion, in a far more effective fashion than before. And I believe you'll see over the next few years some quite dramatic progress in the so-called virtual university. Next file. All right. So this is a file I made a long time ago. So it's meant to contrast the traditional, some of the features of the traditional high-performance computing approach with the web approach. So as I had something to do with the beginning of high-performance Fortran, I'm allowed to insult it. So I use that as indicative of a typical HPCC technology. So a traditional HPCC strategy is here we have a computing pyramid with a lot of small machines at the bottom, from PCs and the web on up, and various supercomputers at the top. So a nifty thing, a typical thing one might do is port HPF so that it runs on an ATM connected set of PCs. To give a typical example of a HPCC strategy. So that's starting at the niche of the pyramid and taking the technology down. So that's a useful thing to do. It allows people at the top of the pyramid to use the technology at the bottom. The trouble with that approach is that Bill Gates couldn't care less about that because he doesn't start at the top of the pyramid, he starts at the bottom. So an alternative strategy is to start at the bottom of the pyramid and port upwards. So the sort of general idea of using web technologies for computing is that if we start at the bottom of the pyramid and link up to the top, we stand a better chance of producing a viable infrastructure because we can then use the very well supported bottom of the pyramid technologies and use those resources, which are the large amount of money going into the generation of them, to do large-scale computing. Whereas the problem with the porting downward strategy is it doesn't so clearly leverage the huge investment at the low end. Next file. So here's the basic philosophy. We would claim that the web is basically a distributed computing environment. So what we want to do is to build parallel computing environments, which are approximately the only difference between distributed and parallel computing is the type of synchronization and correspondingly lower latencies and higher bandwidth one needs for parallel computing. So the goal would be to take the rich infrastructure from the distributed computing world, marry it with the knowledge of synchronization, etc., from the parallel computing world and build some combined environment which hopefully has the best features of both worlds. So it's sort of obvious that the distributed computing world is of course a lot larger than the parallel computing world, but of course it doesn't solve as tightly synchronized the problem. So we will address that later on. Next file. So all this foil does, which is another old one I made, points out that if you look at the total performance in the so-called set-top boxes / home PC / video games and compare it to a bunch of teraflop supercomputers, there's some factor of 100 to 1,000 greater performance in those World Wide Web clients than there are total central computing resources. Next file. All right, so this just says this in words again, that you'll have some 100 million clients maybe, that's roughly the number of homes / set-top boxes, and those would naturally be supported by parallel servers, so you will have. And all of these numbers are substantially larger than the supercomputer arena. As you will look, people think about this as a client-server architecture. It is more plausibly, in my opinion, viewed as a server-server architecture, because I believe it is natural to run effectively web servers, and is effectively happening on the client side, and that's. That also goes hand in hand with people being able to publish as well as to access. Next file. All right. So actually, I think this file is showed more than once. So this is meant to be the overall architecture. So at the top there, we have a bunch of applications. And I don't put computing in there just because I normally think about computing as a service, not an application. So they reuse a bunch of services. So for instance, digital video might be enabled by effectively the cable and et cetera industry and TV industry to deliver information into people's homes. It can then get reused to store and disseminate video in healthcare and education and so on. All right, so then we have, so services are basically generic applications. I would claim that, that effectively what is happening is that these services are getting implemented on what I call web windows, which is essentially the operating system for the World Wide Web, if you like. And the web windows is itself built using all these standard technologies, which I mentioned before. Next file. So I would claim that, well, these are at least four of these critical technologies. Of course, they're not they may be different implementations of the same ideas, but I believe all of these technologies are obviously essential. So Java, probably most of you, given the number, said you were familiar, most of you are essentially familiar with that. I guess I would claim that to me it's very likely that Java will replace Fortran as the dominant programming language for science and engineering. And if you wish to either disagree or agree with that, you can come to a birds of a feather session I'm organizing around that theme on Wednesday at 1:30. So I find that as I'm teaching this semester both Java and Fortran 90, I believe I'm allowed to have that opinion. All right. And it's also possible that Java will replace C++ as a software engineering language, or at least compete with C++ as a software engineering language. So JavaScript is a more limited language. This particular page here is riddled with JavaScript. VRML is a very important technology in the world, is especially for HPCC, because the world is three-dimensional. And whereas HTML allows you to describe documents, VRML, which originally was viewed by some people as a three-dimensional HTML, is essentially a universal description of three-dimensional objects. And so it's therefore very useful in areas such as scientific visualization, description of commercial products, building of virtual worlds, etc. So when I teach my courses in this area, the capability that the students get the best job offers for is the ability to link databases to the web. As I'll mention later on, I think there's been at MPAC at Syracuse, we've had what I would consider a remarkable change in the area of databases. For 5 years ago, we sort of had a relatively minor involvement with databases. We had some sort of research project in parallel databases. Now we have dozens of projects which are using on a daily basis relational and object databases simply because those databases are now linked to the web and are relatively easy to use. So I guess I would view this is a certainly very useful technology, and things such as JDBC, the Java Database Connection, are going to make it even easier. Next file. Now let's skip over these trends. Let me just go here. Right. I just wanted to make a few remarks about web windows. So I would claim that a lot of the excitement today about NT or Unix is a little peculiar to me. As far as I can see, the goal of everybody should be to write your software to none of those, but rather for the API defined by the World Wide Web. So I believe that by far the most successful model over the next few years will not be worrying about the Wintel interface or the Unix interface. It will be worrying about the web interface. And so you will see various examples of that here later on. And so web windows is not terribly well defined, especially as the web is evolving, but it's essentially that it's defined as whatever the current set of web servers and clients define as their open interfaces, which will be things like the so-called Common Gateway Interface, CGI interface for servers, and the various Java and VRML and HTML interfaces for clients. And of course the reason I believe that Web Windows is going to be far more successful than any other operating system is that it is more or less universal. If you write your software so that it links not to a particular operating system but rather to the web, clients essentially run on all systems. So you can then have your software portable between PCs, Macs, etc. So I see that, and I don't see how these other operating systems can possibly compete with that. Next file. That's not to say that Bill Gates shouldn't provide us a few interrupts in Windows NT and so that his work is sort of useful, but I don't see it matters too much in the long run. All right, so this points out an essential feature of the Web Windows environment, namely, obviously, Web Windows is the operating, by definition, the operating environment of the web. So it means that it can link all these, in the top part of the diagram, we have PCs and workstations running various operating systems all linked together. And they can be a various combination of navigators or servers. But Web Windows is a perfectly viable operating system for a standalone PC or a standalone set-top box, because there's obviously no reason why you can't run a server and a client on the same machine. Indeed, that SGI there is actually to avoid you twiddling your thumbs and falling asleep, and while we access the web at Syracuse, nearly all this material is being fetched by a server mounted on this particular machine here. So effectively this machine has a couple of servers and a browser, and it's effectively using the Web Windows concept. Next file, just press next. All right. So if you think about, so there's a couple of other reasons why Web Windows will dominate over Unix and NT. One is that the software model of the web is somewhat more attractive. Namely, we're used especially in the PC world, to have monolithic applications, what DoD might call stovepipe applications, total solutions, which in today's rapidly evolving world is not obviously the right approach. And so, whereas the web naturally encourages a much more modular approach to software. So, and that has two advantages. A, the software is modular, which is a good idea. B, you can harness the creative energy of the world. So, usually I like to compare some sort of hierarchy of software organization as perhaps in IBM or Microsoft versus the less organized software organization of hackers around the world. All right, next. All right. So actually, this frame here, in some sense, exhibits web windows, because so you can compare this presentation software, such as Persuasion and PowerPoint, with what you would do using the web. So what's the problem for Persuasion or PowerPoint? Well, one of their major problems is that they are monolithic. Namely, this particular foil was prepared on Persuasion, but neither Persuasion nor PowerPoint actually define an interface that allows you to extract the information on that foil without taking a screen dump. The thing you can get out of Persuasion is the outline file, but you can't actually get the fact that it's got a yellow title and the font of that title is such and such, etc. That is only defined, as far as I know, only known to the internal software developers at Adobe, and not known to anybody else. And so I would claim that clearly violates the principles of web windows, where you must have everything should be built to modular interfaces. So let me actually, that's the same foil, but it's just the HTML. And so you can say, well, obviously HTML doesn't look as good as the previous foil. And the reason is, of course, it's not yellow and pink and properly fonted. That's because I extracted it from the outline file of Persuasion, which doesn't have that information. But it seems to me quite obvious that suitable use of interfaces such as HTML in its various advanced forms as the definition of the output of presentation packages has to be a much better idea, because then you can link it in various nifty fashions to produce far more powerful presentations. Just do next. All right, so actually here's an early example we built using the Hot Java browser, which points out that once you decide that you're going to use this sort of open interface, then you can do nifty things like using suitable Java applets for the title, and you can, of course, define colors if you want to, etc. Next file, this one is essentially an old version of what we had already. All right. Okay. So the example I've given is the what I call the web top productivity environment, or to just contrast with the desktop productivity environment. And but the lesson, which is that the natural software model is not the previous one with hidden interfaces, but it's a much more open model, I believe, is critical. Java is probably the most important technology in implementing it, because Java is the technology that allows you to build the most flexible clients. So let me see. this point, there are a few files here which make another general point which is relevant. Namely, when people criticize me that using the web for computing is ridiculous because the internet is too slow, I point out that that argument, it may or may not be that the internet is too slow. It's not too slow for all applications. It's certainly too slow for the vast majority. That's not terribly relevant because the dominant activity in the web today is actually not internets, but intranets, namely it's dedicated networks for a particular application, which in the HPCC arena could be typified by iWay. In the business enterprise systems, it's just a network of that particular corporation. And so that actually addresses some of the security and bandwidth and latency issues, because what we're, the goal of this, the use of web technology, is to leverage the world, leverage the excellent software model to build customized applications that will run on particular hype networks which have been optimized for that application. Next one. All right, so this is just a Business Week screen dump showing that it believes in intranets. Next file. I think we just skipped through all of these things. So this one from the same article points out that intranets will dwarf internets. This file you do have to scan down to see the bottom, but it just has a year scan. Just scan this slider here. So it just says that starting around now, the expectation was, at least in February of 96, that intranets will dominate internets as a business opportunity. Next file. And we don't want that. Well, this is some final. Next file. Okay. All right, so this is a pretty peculiar color, but an important file. So this is meant to summarize the basic idea. So the reason why, in my opinion, HPCC was unable to produce, HPCC produced the correct ideas, but actually produced essentially, it didn't produce much working software infrastructure. And I believe the reason for that is sort of intrinsic. The HPCC community is too small either to be able to afford good software or to build good software. And actually, most communities are too small to do that. And so the web, in some sense, has, by definition, ought to have the best software because it has the biggest market. So you take the worldwide internet and the world as the customer, you get, because that's the largest market, you get the best software, and that's best both in both price and performance. I mean, by performance, I mean capability. You will have to possibly add various capabilities. For instance, if we're doing high-performance computing, we'll probably want to look at the web servers and decrease the latency and enhance the bandwidth, etc. And of course, if we're doing defense or commerce applications, we'll have to worry about security. So particular applications will feed in particular capabilities, and then we have, having done that, we then do two types of things. We choose particular networks, which are intranets, and particular applications such as virtual universities, computing, or healthcare, and we build customized software to run on customized networks, inheriting this space. So that's sort of the business model for what we do. Next file. All right. So this file was just meant to illustrate to some extent the rapid progress of the web. Namely, this was the diagram I drew in spring of 95 for my web class, and it was pretty simple in those days. It still had some of the essential features, various universal interfaces. The next file was sort of the model as of 9 months later, the end of 95, which is a much more complicated model, where instead of having just HTML going back and forth, you now have 3D objects, VRML, you have the specification of programming, that's Java applets, you actually have programming itself, that's JavaScript, you have a rich set of plugins, you have Java software running on the client side, and on the server side you also have a growing trend to Java servers and things like servlets, which are the equivalent of applets on the server side. So the model of the web is getting far more complex. However, it is still true that everything is the interfaces are still relatively universal. There's some disagreements on the details, but they're universal. And I guess it might be worth remembering that there's an almost trivial reason they're universal. Namely, in the good old days, or the bad old days, when computers weren't very powerful and we didn't have much memory, and we were, say, trying to build, say, Microsoft Word, we sort of had to define a very optimized, extremely cleverly packed binary intermediate format for our Word document so that we could fit it into memory and run it in an effective fashion. If you look at the equivalent web approach, it's extremely inefficient. It's ASCII format, you know, it's free text, it's text format, so you can actually read it and decode it. It's not terribly optimized. And the reason you can get away with it is the computers are so much more powerful and the memory is so much cheaper that you can afford to have open interfaces. So it's not that people did it wrong in the past, they were forced to do it. Now the trade-off is the advantages of the open interfaces are so much greater that you can afford the performance loss. You actually can't always afford the performance loss. One of the major problems of the current VRML implementations, which are 3D objects, is their ridiculously poor performance because they're doing no compression and ASCII transmission of the information, which is okay for documents, but is not a terribly good idea if you're specifying a rich 3D scene. So there's some... The web is going to have to face up to some performance issues, but a lot of the reasons it can do what it's doing and produce this much better environment is simply because the trade-off between performance and usability can be done differently today because of the nature of today's computers. Next file. So let's see where we are, 916. So I'm going to, I'm just going to skip most of these foils here. I just go through these overview foils to be logical. So I always feel a little sad for Perl, as it's, I consider Perl quite a nice language. But I believe Perl will be overtaken by the web. And a reasonable indication of this is that around in December 94, Perl 5 was released, which was a so-called object-oriented version of Perl. It also had various other important improvements. Well, today, if you go to your local bookstore, which is Barnes & Noble at Syracuse, you will find one or two books with the word Perl 5 in the title. However, at least the ones I've looked at do not describe Perl 5. They describe Perl, and in the reprinting, they added the 5 in front of it. So there is today, as far as I know, no book which describes Perl 5. Whereas there, as you probably know, if you go to Barnes & Noble, you'll find 20 books on Java, and those are 20 different books from what you had on Java a couple of months before. So whereas Java has about 50 books on it, Perl 5, as far as I know, has zero. If anybody knows to the contrary, I would like to find that book because I would like to use it in my class. But so I see that as an illustration. So I believe, well, even though Perl has a lot of capabilities which are not in Java, I assume that it will be overtaken by the Java juggernaut. But still, it remains obviously a very useful technology because of its excellent text and document processing capability. And at least historically, most server extensions through the Common Gateway interface were built with Perl. However, even there, it's relatively obvious that the Java servers and the concept of servlets will presumably, in some time period, like maybe a year or so, replace that as the implementation of choice. Next. All right. So I suggest you probably better learn Perl and be mild because it is quite useful, but I believe Java is obviously a more important language, and it has a lot of areas that it is extremely important. Originally, which shows the heritage of this file, originally Java, it seemed to me, the reason why it was so important was it took what was previously, the web before Java came out was a server technology. Essentially, the client was powerful but fixed, the browser, and all capabilities had to be added with so-called CGI scripts on the server. When Java came out, for the first time, you could put capability on the browser in a natural fashion, which, as we learn in high-performance computing, you need to build scalable applications, as there are, in fact, far more clients than servers, and more computing power, presumably, in clients. That is a very important capability, because you can now, once Java comes out, you may not find it easy to implement, but at least you can design balanced systems, and you can put what is natural on the client and put what is natural on the server As an example, this technology here, which happens to be JavaScript, not Java, that's all a client-side technology, so you get relatively good performance. Whereas if I'd done this implementation 18 months ago, all those buttons up there would have to have gone, would almost normally have gone back to a CGI script on a server, and you would have found the response far less satisfactory. So it does some. The fact that Java not only allows you to balance the computing, but it also allows you to put what is naturally on the client side on the client, and therefore build much better interfaces. Because inevitably, if you wander back to a server, you're going to get some sort of delay, which will depend on the network and the cleverness of your implementation. Next file. So this reveals my prejudice as to why I think Java will replace Fortran as a scientific computing language. The reason I believe it will is threefold. One is the technical reasons is that it ought to be possible to build as efficient compilers for Java as for Fortran, because Java has simple arrays, it has no pointers. And also, although if you use objects in Java, you're going to exhibit some overhead. However, the numerically intensive parts can be written with simple types, and those can be optimized by compilers in ought to be possible to build as efficient compilers as you can for Fortran and Fortran 90. And I guess it has two critical additional features that Fortran doesn't have. It has object-oriented features, which I think are relatively obviously good ideas. Fortran 90 has some object-oriented features, but I believe them to be clumsier than those in Java. And perhaps the most important feature Java has is that it's linked automatically to the web. That is, I believe, one of the reasons it is Java is the natural first programming language that you teach people, because when you teach somebody Fortran at least, or C, the standard Hello World applications, you print it out and you get some piece of paper saying Hello World. Whereas in Java, you get some nifty applet saying Hello World, or something interesting. So Java is a much more social language than Fortran, and a much more appealing language, especially for beginners, because the answer is graphical. The natural output is graphical. And also that graphical output can be shared with the people's peers. So as a sort of a one of the personal reasons that I like web technology is that it actually allows me to discuss what I do with my family, in particular my children. And my 12-year-old daughter wants two things for Christmas. She wants a Java class. She also wants a Perl class, actually, but she mainly wants a Java class, and she wants a chat room. She wants to have her own chat room. And so I believe that kids from her generation, at least the ones having access to the internet, will grow up knowing Java, because that's what they see on the web, and I believe that somehow they'll learn it. So I'm currently trying to take my university courses on Java and modify them for the K-12 so that I can deliver on this Christmas present and for my daughter, and I see that certainly compared to other languages, it is more attractive because its graphics is unfortunately not fully interpreted. It would be much easier to teach if it was fully interpreted. And I believe there's going to have to be versions of Java which are fully interpreted. We'll discuss JavaScript, which is fully interpreted, but it ain't Java. But in any case, I think after all these little details are sorted out, children will come to university knowing Java, and they will not learn Fortran. They will rebel. And so we will want to use Java as our scientific computing language. Next file. Let me skip those. I have a performance slide. Alright, so we can discuss the performance issue. So you point out that Java, there is actually a foil later on about the performance of Java. So currently, of course, when you do Java, alright, let me just come back to that. I have a foil on a few things telling you why the performance isn't a problem. Alright, so here's a typical example. So Java can do lots of things. Michael Chang, underusing his capabilities by clicking a button here, built this so-called visible human applet, which, did you get your Sun workstation?
I sell it.
Sell it, all right. So he was awarded by Sun, he won a prize at the Java Cup for this when was that this year? March?
May.
May, all right. So in May, this particular applet won a prize as one of the best educational applets using Java, and it illustrates some of the capabilities of Java, namely, it has the abilities to move cursors through customized front pages, customize interfaces, and then display, in this case here, slices from the Federal Visible Human Database. So this is Java as a user interface. So that's one type of application of Java. Next file. So So this is another one Michael built, which is his Rubik's Cube written using Java. So this shows you how Java can be used to build PC games or children's games. So another student of mine, if any of you have children, you may know the children's game called TidPix, which allows you to build images. So I'm going to base my Java class for kids around a Java version of that PC system called TidPix, so that they can see how they can actually see how they can use this language to do interesting imaging applications. So those between them illustrate. So here you actually are doing some computing. You're doing some this particular thing rotates, etc. If you want, we can hook into to internet and see it do it for real. In the break if you want. Next file. Alright, so let's skip over that. This is collaboration. So probably the most important application of Java at this moment in time is collaboration technologies, and I'll discuss that later on. Let's just skip over to the next few. So this one here is a little applet, which actually effectively is a Java implementation of an image processing application, which was also done using ABS. We basically ported an ABS image processing application to Java. So that's another type of thing to do. Next, press that 52. All right. So. So, how many people here know Java, are reasonably familiar with Java? Not many. All right, so I will go through these foils then. All right, so this is what I told you don't want to do. This is a so-called Java application, which does produce a printout. So this is your favorite Hello World application, using the println method with an argument called Hello World. And apart from that, there is very little different. I mean, Java is very similar to C or C++. Next file. All right, so this is a more useful Hello World version, illustrating how you would build a simple applet that say hello world on the screen, and you define an applet which is a child of the basic applet class. That basic applet class has a bunch of predefined methods. One of the most basic is the so-called paint method, which draws the Java frame buffer. That is always called with an argument which is of the class graphics, and that particular class has a method called drawString. If you hand that method sizing positioning information and a text, it will produce hello world on the screen. And because we want to tell the Java compiler that we are using something from the graphics class, we have to import the graphics class in the beginning. So that is the world's simplest Hello World program in Java. It is, you do have to know all this stuff about which classes exist, but one of the, I mentioned the sad commentary about the difference between Java and Perl in terms of books. The other remarkable thing about Java is the amazing online resources that are available for the language. If you can get, either on the CD-ROMs, which are at the back of any one of these Java books, or if you go to standard websites, you can see some beautiful hyperlinked resources which tell you about all the classes and all the methods and what they do, etc. It's got a remarkable, there is electronically, I mean, Java's, in my opinion, clearly the best documented language with the best tutorials and the best examples available. So the ability to learn Java is, I believe, much easier than those of other languages because of this wealth of information, both in the form of books and in the forms of electronically, either through CD-ROMs or the web. Next file. So obviously, if you when you built this applet, you'd have to put it in a suitable directory, and then you would add to your HTML essentially an instruction to grab that particular class, the Hello World class, and place it in this particular part of the HTML page. So Java has a pretty easy to incorporate into standard HTML pages. The applet tag has also defined the size of the window on the screen. Next file. All right. So Java comes with a pretty good set of graphics capabilities, and as I mentioned, and also has some excellent image processing capabilities. Things you can do very simply are changing fonts and colors. Next file. So if I wanted to make my applet look differently, I could define a font, which in this case is Times Roman, bold, 36 point size. I can use the sent font method on my graphic object G. Sent font is defined already part of the ordinary Java library. So that's what you find out about by one of these hyperlinked, by reading a book or from one of these hyperlinked resources. So you just hand that method the new font. You can also change the color, in this case to make it red, and then you just use the drawstring method again to display it. Next. All right, so this is an amusing foil. You'll have to scan it gradually. All right, so this comes from Gosling from a while ago, and it's his comparison of Java with other languages. Now, of course, Fortran doesn't enter Gosling's worldview, but it does C and C++ do. The only thing to notice is that red is good and yellow is fair and black is poor. You will notice a reasonably large number of blacks in the C and C++ column and a bunch of reds in the Java column. So Gosling says Java has good performance. Simple, it's object-oriented, it's robust, it's secure, it's interpreted, it's dynamic, it's portable, it's architectural neutral, it supports threads, it has intrinsic garbage corrections, and handles exceptions. And actually, Tickle, Perl, and Smalltalk come out sort of okay, but the other language, done. Next file. So you mentioned the performance. So here is the performance of Java, which was done, this must have been done, this is probably done 6 months ago. And here's my SGI running, this comes from Jack Dongumbagar, it's running Linpack, and it's running at, my SGI runs at 0.5 megaflops. And at that time this was done, the best performance was, I think, a digital alpha running a little over a megaflop. And that's about a factor of 50 slower, 50 to 100 slower than the best Fortran or C compilers, showing that the performance of Java is dreadful. Next file. What is happening here? You have to wait here. It's trundling off to MPEG for this file. Now, you don't have this file, and you probably can't read this one, can you? I have a handout which I can give you on this, but you just gave me this as a real file, didn't you? You gave me Michael's things? No. This was not the right one. Is this what you gave me, this one? I'll tell you in the second session where to get all this information from. Yeah, why don't you give me the overhead projector? I knew this. These particular foils don't work properly. What? Is that right? Well, as I can't even find this one. Now here it is. Right, let's just do this. Well, you see, this technology is of course so much better than the screen technology. We don't even have to work out how to switch the screen off. So we can now beat up this stupid electronic technology and go back to some decent technology here. So up this file. Points out, this comes from Wojtek Fomanski, who from MPEG, and he is actually building this thing called Webflow, we'll discuss later, which is the essentially a sophisticated AVS-like system to do data flow computing on the web. So one of the key technologies which has just become available is a set of web servers built in Java. And there are several types of web servers built in Java. We'll see later on when we do collaboration, there's one Habanero, there's one thing MPEG built called Tango, which are specialized collaboration servers. But there are also general purpose servers, which are the two best known at the moment. They're called Jigsaw and Jeeves. Jigsaw comes from MIT. And yeah, I believe that all that one needs to know is that one would expect that a sort of universal Java environment will soon become available where you already have Java clients or Java apps built in non-Java clients. By the way, it's generally expected that Netscape is rebuilding their browser in Java. And I believe they have to do that to be competitive, because otherwise they can't take advantage of many of the ongoing things going on in the web. So actually, there's some lots of quite interesting features of Java servers in that I already will mention later on this thing, say, called JDBC, the Java Database Connection, which is a universal interface agreed to, I think, well, I seem to remember, over 20 database vendors and Java. So there are a set of Java methods that access databases in a uniform fashion. There's an interesting technology which I think has some relevance for libraries in HPCC, namely something called servlets. So applets, although we didn't really discuss them in detail, allow you to download code on demand to clients. Servlets allow you to do the same thing for servers. So applets and servlets seem to me have some interesting applications to the software community for libraries, because that's sort of what a library is. It's some software on demand. And so a lot of the, so this allows you to build very stripped down systems and just add capabilities as you need, which is of course what you want to do with libraries. So these servers, which are, Jigsaw is the only one I even have any vague familiarity. Jeeves comes to me, the JavaSoft or SunSoft, I always get them confused. Jigsaw is 30,000 lines of Java. So that says that even though this language only got properly defined sort of in January, you have some pretty sophisticated applications out there. So you can expect to see some, quite important changes in the infrastructure of the web based on these, on the use of Java in a more general fashion. Next one. So you pointed out, you said, "Oh, look, dismal after that." Never mind. See, the advantage of this technology is that for me to keep track of all these foils causes me great pain, whereas it's much easier for me to stick it on electronically and deliver it in this fashion. But anyway, never mind. All right. So. All right, so let's discuss the performance of Java. So, as we pointed out in that rather washed out screen dump from the Limpack Java benchmark, which there is a URL, this is in, I believe, in your handout, that we're off a factor of 50. So there are two things we can do to get back the factor of 50. The first thing we must notice is how Java is implemented. So the way Java is implemented today is you run something called the Java compiler. That produces essentially a universal machine code. There's a thing called the Java virtual machine, which is basically a universal machine code. So when you take a .java file written in ASCII text as Java, that is compiled to a .class file, which is this universal machine code, which is then downloaded, and then it runs on any client. So the reason we have universal machine code is to make it universal. You can then run Java on any system that has built into it a Java interpreter, which takes this universal machine code and converts it to the native machine code for that computer. So now there's some nifty technology which comes from the computer science community and studying interpreters called a just-in-time compiler. So I'm not a great expert in that area. My belief is that what a just-in-time compiler does is the following. It notices, we have two choices. Here we have Limpack. Remember, Limpack is a loop. So it's originally in this universal machine code. We could, every time we went through the loop, interpret this universal machine code, make the real machine code, and then execute it. Alternatively, we could interpret the machine code the first time we go through the loop, stick it away somewhere in a cache, and then reuse the native machine code the next time through the loop. So that's what roughly, I believe, what a just-in-time compiler is. It does compilation on the fly, and it reuses that compilation. So using a just-in-time compiler on Limpack gives you something like a factor of 10 to 20 performance increase. So a huge increase. You'd expect Limpack or any iterative application to gain the most from this technology. We have an example at MPAC, Merrick has a video decoder written in Java. And the just-in-time compiler from Microsoft, which is by far the best just-in-time compiler, is only four times slower than the original C code. So that's quite impressive. So this is still interpreted, it's still Java, and yet it's only off a factor of four from the original excellent C code, isn't that right? But it's almost certainly iterative. So again, it's iterative. All right. So, however, there is no reason why you cannot view Java as an ordinary language. You do not have to produce universal machine code and interpret it. You can produce real machine code. So there's a perfectly reasonable concept called a native Java compiler, which takes your favorite machine, it takes .java files, and produces .optimized machine code files, and just runs them. And now you have, of course, a disadvantage. It's not universal because it's the compiler for your current machine. But that's true of Fortran or C++ or C. Obviously, you tend to have a compiler for each machine. So Java has the advantage that it can be used in two ways. What you would call semi-interpreted. This first way, the universal machine code, is not fully interpreted because you have to run it in two stages. You go from .java to .class, .class to non-optimized machine code, and you also have to do that interpretation in real time. So that's the semi-interpreted mode, which, as we seem to be finding, is going to end up at the moment about possibly 5 times slower on iterative codes than the best compilers. But when I say that we're going to use Java to do scientific computing, we're going to use the bottom route. We're going to use native compilers for Java, and or we're going to use Java front ends to manipulate existing Fortran and C codes, which are going to run as highly optimized standard libraries. So either use Java and that's in the near term clearly going to be the method of choice. So that I call the Java wrapper approach. You build Java, you notice that most of your work as a scientific programmer is doing I/O and screwing around and stuff like that. Use Java to do that because Java's better at that, and you use your existing C and Fortran to run the so-called native classes.
Another approach would be to put a Java chip, give a Java chip maybe with Java bytecode and stick into each computer.
Yes, you could do. But that doesn't seem to me to make a lot of sense. The whole purpose of the universal bytecode is to make it universal, not to be able to make a fortune for Sun so that you would be forced to use that as the machine that had that machine code. So if you want to build if you want to run Java on your toaster or your set-top box where everything's at a premium, that may be a very good idea. And I'm not saying there isn't a huge market for that, but I believe this combination, there is no reason why you can't build excellent Java compilers. Java is a perfectly reasonable language. It is actually easier than C++ to build good compilers for. I guess, all of this is going to happen. So one of the advantages of Java is its richness. It has managed to do reasonably well in a lot of areas. Whereas other languages, say such as Fortran, are wonderful because of its language. It's very easy to produce highly optimized code for important scientific applications in Fortran, and so it has a particular feature. Java is many better than Fortran there, and probably maybe a little worse, but Java does excellently in a whole set of areas, which is why I think it's an excellent language. Next file. Let's scoot down this one. So this demonstrates... No, sorry, I didn't mean that. Back to that previous one. Oh, no. No, yeah, that, ne- do next again. Just, what happened to the one that just disappeared? Do previous. No, all right, I'm sorry, do next. Okay, fine. Yeah, let's look at this one. Okay, let's scroll that down. This one you don't have, I believe. You may remember the previous one where my SGI was sitting here at 0.54 and the maximum over here was around 1, which is here. So I reran Dongar. I just went to the same page a couple of months ago And now they have just-in-time compiler results on Limpack. And for Limpack, the best just-in-time compiler results are now, I can't read it now, but it's over, I believe it's 13 megaflops on September 30th. And you might notice poor old SGIs are still sitting at half a megaflop. So the just-in-time compilers only run, I believe, on PCs at the moment. So this illustrates, of course, again, the sad conflict between the workstation world and the PC world. These advances are coming first on the PCs and then on the workstation world. So clearly, so here we have a factor of 10 improvement, and it's almost certainly, from our experience, going to be best on the Internet Explorer, because Netscape is behind at the moment in that arena. But now we're again within factors of 5 of best performance on Limpack for the semi-interpreted Java. And so this, remember, is in a time period which is quite small. There was only a few months difference between these numbers. Next file. All right, so I would not claim that the performance issues of the web are solved at all. They're very important. I do believe that there are not intrinsic performance problems with web technology that cannot be solved. That's my belief. I also happen to believe it's not a lot of point for us to work trying to solve them, because, like, say, we want to decrease the latency in the Java server. Well, we can go into Jeeves or some other server and tweak it up, but by the time we finish tweaking it, they would have changed that server anyway because the technology is evolving so fast. So my belief at the moment is that it's best to look at overall architecture and systems issues and assume that the world will solve the performance problems. Or if they don't, they'll stabilize the technology well enough that it makes sense to go in there and tune it. At the moment, this technology is changing and getting better so fast that I don't think it makes a lot of sense to put a lot of effort into tuning. Next file. So that file just discussed native classes. So that's, I guess this is what this says here. So one of the lessons from the fact that this technology is changing and is not terribly high performance at the moment is that there are two areas where these issues are not so important. The first is education, and the second is program development. So I would say the first obvious places to use these ideas are in those two arenas, using existing technology for production, because that's where you certainly need very high performance. Next file. So this file restates what I tried to emphasize before, that you should think of the I-Way, not the Internet, or the VBNS, not the Internet, or an ATM-connected PC cluster, not the Internet. That's going to be the implementation system for our any web computing activities we do. And if you like, sort of roughly what we're trying to do is the web has a wonderful, very loosely synchronized, coarse-grained type computing model. What we need to do is to sort of integrate into it the tight synchronization and the nifty algorithms that HPCC has produced. Next file. So here we're going to describe JavaScript. JavaScript is technically quite a useful language. So JavaScript, unlike Java, is fully interpreted. And so it's a very convenient way for rapid prototyping. It's obvious to me, I think it's obvious, that we need interpreted versions of Java. In fact, I had a file which I forgot to put in this talk, which says that there is some sort of a natural, if you look at sort of a layered software model, at the very highest level where you're sitting there at your workstation, you don't want to be writing .java files, compiling the .class and downloading them. You want to be running at a scripted level, either graphically or equivalently, if you want, in a more powerfully, some sort of fully scripted interpreted language. So we want at the top level a fully interpreted environment. Then we can have a semi-interpreted Java-like world. Underneath that, we can have these optimized libraries with native classes. So I believe there's a sort of very natural hierarchical model of which JavaScript is the only entry at the top for a fully interpreted world, but it's not aimed at full the difference between JavaScript and Java is JavaScript's only aimed at document handling. It's not aimed at general computing. General comp like Java is. So I would view JavaScript as an important concept. Its current implementation is too limited, in my opinion, to survive a long way. Next file. All right. So the key, I've already illustrated the key advantage of JavaScript. And that is that all these buttons are client-side, because these are all built using JavaScript. Whereas normally, if you went through a server technology, this would have to send a message to a server, the server have to wake up and think, and send a message back to the client, and then something might happen. So this JavaScript is sitting there at the server, at the client, doing its thing. And there is a lot, I listened to a talk by somebody who built an education system using CGI scripts and claimed it was too slow because of simple things it got too slow a response. I believe anything, JavaScript has an excellent interface to HTML forms, and almost anything you do where you just need relatively modest computation, you can do with JavaScript without invoking any CGI scripts. Next page. This actually illustrates this general structure of web wisdom, which is I would claim to be an industry standard syntax of sort of using multi-framed displays. The sort of index frame here is on the other side from here, but so JavaScript allows you to build this sort of general capability where you have information in the middle, some index here, and some control buttons up the top there, which the more general example I could show you would have audio capability and carousel capability. You can see a carousel capability, etc. Next file. Yeah, let's skip that one. Next, but we've already seen that one. So these files here just illustrate that you can use this technology to build a whole set of user interfaces of this general type. This is a patient record database. Next file. Next one. I don't know how many of these we have. All right, so this one's actually a little more interesting. And Dave Warner will mention this one this afternoon. I view this as a reasonably significant application. So this is called CareWeb, and you will give it a great deal more information about CareWeb. The reason why I consider CareWeb pretty interesting is this combines several of our technologies. Namely, this actually, you may remember in the old days of the web, you sent back and forth on, you put ASCII text on a disk, and then you send that ASCII text to the client. Well, in this CareWeb application was built with the School of Nursing at Syracuse University and the local school district as a prototype prototype resource to support school nurses and allow them to essentially have a patient record database and to link through the web with both the hospital and the local school of nursing. And this particular file here points out that essentially at the back end of this system here is a sort of typical modern information system in that it has no HTML pages. Everything is stored, in this case, an Oracle database. It can be in any of your favorite databases. So the entire information is stored in an Oracle database. When you click any buttons on this system, that request is sent to, in this case, a CGI script, which accesses the Oracle database. The Oracle database, in this case, the language which we mentioned called PLSQL, generates the text, the HTML, transmits it back to the client, and to make this life more complicated, it doesn't actually generate HTML, it actually generates JavaScript, and so it actually generates programming back to you, which then comes back to the client. So this is a pretty complex application where you actually do not have ASCII, pure ASCII text at any stage of the operation. So that, I would say, is today the state of the art of such an information system. You need JavaScript on the client side for rapid client side manipulation because you're not going to go through this mess with the database every time you do anything. So you put everything you can download options and all sorts of auxiliary information stored in the values of JavaScript variables, which you access client side, and then you and that allows you to produce, say, much better user interactions than you could without it. So, next file. This is probably yet enough. So this is a typical page generated from this system, which is some way through the interaction showing a particular. This one has 30. This particular Oracle application has 30 separate tables corresponding to the various entities involved. Next file. Well, here's Web Wisdom. Next file. We've already seen this. Alright, so if you're. Alright, so this particular file here, some of our technology that we're using here is developed in a contract for Rome Laboratory, which is developing a prototype command and control system using web technology. And which we would claim to be substantially lower cost than existing command and control technologies. And so you don't have to know much about command and control, but this is meant to be a reasonably faithful reproduction of the so-called Cheyenne Mountain Granite Sentry command and control interface. Next file. And it uses JavaScript. Next file. All right. So. What is JavaScript? So you can think of JavaScript. There was a part of Java I didn't talk about called the Abstract Windowing Toolkit, which is basically the library that allows you to build buttons and stuff like that and make them talk to each other. And what JavaScript has is essentially the capabilities of the Abstract Windowing Toolkit, except instead of being built on top of a Java client, it's built on top of a Netscape client. And so why is that a neat idea? Well, it may not be a neat idea if the Netscape client wasn't very good, but that the Netscape client comes with a lot of capabilities which we'd rather not build into every single one of our, build a giant Java applet to replace. This allows us a lot of the flexibility of Java in the user interaction, but keep all the wonderful capabilities of a Netscape client. And so that's why I said JavaScript has got it half right. It's fully interpreted, which we definitely want, but it's only really got one feature of Java done well. Like the only important, whereas Java comes with a wonderful set of objects and classes and methods, JavaScript, it comes with a math class, a date class, and a document class. The document class is very sophisticated and has all the necessary capabilities to manipulate a Netscape document, including all the forms and everything like that. But that's all it does. It does not have an image class and stuff like that. So Whereas Java is a far richer and an order of magnitude more sophisticated language. But JavaScript is fully interpreted. Next file. Well, I have not tried it on the Internet Explorer. They claim they support JavaScript.
It works, of course.
It does work, yes. Marek's had some experience, so the answer is yes, but we haven't. I wouldn't guarantee that every feature of JavaScript runs the same way.
Yes.
I only guarantee this JavaScript runs on Netscape. All right. So we have to do Hello World when we do any programming language. So this shows you how you do JavaScript in an HTML page. You have this gobbledygook here, which is ingeniously put in there so that this can be ignored by people, by browsers that don't understand JavaScript, and can be interpreted JavaScript-enabled browsers. So this looks like a comment. Because of this, it looks like a comment to old browsers and looks like JavaScript to new browsers. And I mentioned the object called document, so there's an object called document in JavaScript, and it has a method called writeLM, which says write followed by a line feed. And so here you just have, so this is sort of interesting, it shows that you have real programming intermixed with your text. So this HTML page just has programming in it, which in this case here is saying go to the document object, which is the current document, write onto that document the string h1 hello world angle / h1 angle. So it actually writes out it, so all this five lines are equivalent just to this argument here. So this is not a useful program, but it illustrates the nature of JavaScript. Next file. All right. I'm going to stop. I think I meant to stop at 10. As we started late, I'm going to stop at 10:15, which will allow me to finish JavaScript. Seems to be 10. All right. So this is the general syntax. Next file. All right. So here's a very useful type of JavaScript capability. In various tags, you can put a new attribute called onClick. So when we click on this particular thing, which is a button, in this case here, it says onClick equals compute this.form. So it says invoke the JavaScript function called compute, which then does some stuff. It can do whatever you like. So it's a function. So this allows you to take buttons and allow and make them do anything you want. They just invoke functions. So when you click the next, when Michael clicks the next button up there, that next button is carefully looking up the URL of the next file and ordering it to be loaded into this place. Next file. And so that's the answer here. All right. Next file. I think this has the. All right. So here's another, the final example I think I want to do, which shows you some of the capabilities you can do. Namely, suppose you want to write an image file like this. This particular persuasion foil is stored on disk with a particular height and width. Now, when I'm displaying it on this SGI, I want to make it larger than the default value because this has high resolution. When I want to display it on a PC, 800 by 600 screen, I want to make it smaller. So the way I do that is that I have in the HTML page that's downloaded here, this line, effectively this line here, it says the image tag width equals a JavaScript variable called image width, which here is called image width. In this example here, I just defined image width to be 600, which is pixels at the top there, but actually in this Web Wisdom system, image width is read in from a file or printed, entered in by the user, so you can dynamically change, in this case here, the size of the image, so you can adjust your presentation to the screen of choice. So that's a typical example of JavaScript. You can produce parameterized HTML, which can be on the fly. Parameterized, they can be computed, although this doesn't do it. Actually, I realized yesterday what it should do is it knows the size of the screen. It should actually optimize there. You could do some optimization. Next file. All right, so we'll stop there. One thing, I'll just do a demonstration to show you what JavaScript can do. So I pointed out that one of the reasons I like this technology is that it allows one to reuse this one's work technology for one's family. So what I did was take this technology we now see for displays and reused it for the family photo album. You notice this technology allows you to... But this is a JavaScript program which essentially allows you to build general hierarchical trees of information, which in the case I would claim to be a generally useful capability. They were in family photo world, and I don't know... So here's a particular, so basically this manipulates, we can leave some random picture there, that's not a very good picture. So anyway, this shows you how you can, so this JavaScript is manipulating through this this world. If I go back up here to foil world, get back to the original file. And JavaScript has got a bunch of variables which keeps track of all these URLs so that you can live in different worlds at the same time and move back and forth. And they're just done with trivial variables, holding locations of where you are so that you can build up a complex world with lots of different entries, with different positions in different worlds and move back and forth between them. So that's all done client-side. So that's a typical thing you can do with JavaScript. And now you're meant to go and have your coffee. I'm sorry.